John, we're ready.
We are ready.
Are we? Okay. If you would take attendance. Call.
Alfred Morkane.
Present.
Chuck Deggs. Clay Grissom.
Present.
Ian Connell.
Present.
JP Anderson.
Present.
Emmett Kuroga.
Present.
John Flaherty.
Present.
Char Hegde.
Present.
We do have a quorum.
Thank you. I'll call the meeting to order. This meeting is being held in compliance with the Brown Act. Members of the public who wish to access this board meeting were given the information and the locations, the teleconference locations, as well as the meeting ID and passcode on the agenda that was published at the various locations. Members of the public who are attending online wish to comment during the board meeting. We'll use the online raise hand tool in Zoom when the chair elicits public comments. Members of the public planning to attend by phone are requested to, confirm their intent. Individual comments will be limited to 3 minutes. If an interpreter is needed, comments will be translated into English, and the time limit shall be extended to 6 minutes. At its discretion, the board may limit the total time allotted to public comments and set new time limits for individual comments. The board reserves the right to mute and remove a participant from the meeting if the participant unreasonably disrupts the meeting. Requests for disability-related modifications or accommodations to participate in our meeting tonight were to be submitted 48 hours ahead via email. And the information I just cited is published in the agenda in Spanish as well. With that, I'll call the meeting to order and move to item C. Sean, are there any public comments regarding non-agenda items?
There are no requests for public comments.
Okay. The opening remarks. I am very pleased to have in person here in Gilroy our new CEO, Dr. Caprice Young.
Yay! I am so pleased and honored to be here.
Thank you, Caprice. It's nice to have you. Caprice, I've talked to Caprice enough and have other folks enough to, it almost seems like she's been here already for a couple of months. I don't want to understate your appearance here at the first board meeting, but thank you very much for being here. And thank you for starting earlier than you had anticipated. Appreciate it. We have some stuff to go through, and this is a late scheduled meeting, so I'll limit my remarks to the welcoming to our chair and hope that everyone is enjoying their summer. And now that we're heading toward the end of July, getting ready for school. Oh, and to welcome back our board member, Alfred, who was several weeks in Guam working on the typhoon. And as I heard from an old Coast Guard friend, FEMA is doing terrific work there. So welcome back. Alfred's only been back for a week and hasn't even adjusted to jet lag yet. So nice to have you back, Alfred, in person.
I'm pleased to be back.
We'll move to item E, the approval of the prior board meeting, regular board meeting minutes that occurred on June 14th, 2023. And can I approve the both of them on the same vote? I have approved minutes for board meeting on June 20th.
Might be a typo.
Is that the appropriate date?
I think June 20th is the appropriate date.
Okay. Yes. So one set of minutes for June 20th. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're approving the minutes for board meeting on June 20th. Thank you, Mr. General Counsel. Do I hear a motion to approve them?
This is Claire. I'll motion to approve.
Thank you, Claire. Do I hear a second? For approval of the minutes.
Second.
JP, so moved.
Thank you. Any amendments or changes in the minutes? Hearing none. Sean, would you call the roll for approval, please?
Alfred Morikang.
Alan Upstein, I wasn't here.
Chuck Jags. Clay Grissom.
Aye.
Ian Connell.
Aye.
JP Anderson.
Aye.
Jaime Kuruga.
Aye.
John Flaherty.
Aye.
Shar Hegde.
Aye.
The motion is approved.
Thank you. We will move to section two, the consent agenda. Items on approval of the consent agenda are the following: consulting contract with Kevin Sved for transitional purposes, the extended learning opportunities program, MOU for Watsonville, and then authorization of update for signatories of accounts in the various locations, which are items 3 through 6. Do I hear an approval for a motion for approval of the consent agenda, or board members have an opportunity if they want to move an item off the agenda if they so choose? So do I hear a motion? Do I hear any motions?
Motion to approve the consent agenda.
Thank you, Shar. Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Ian. Any discussion about the consent agenda? Hearing none. Would you call the vote, please?
Alfred Morikang.
Aye.
Craig Grissom.
Aye.
Ian Connell.
Aye.
JP Anderson.
Aye.
Jaime Kuruga.
Aye.
John Flaherty.
Aye.
Shar Hegde.
Aye.
The motion is approved.
Thank you. Moving on to the governance committee. As Kirsten will explain, because of some of the natural disasters that occurred, there are certain procedures that we have to follow, and I will recognize Kirsten for 5 minutes to discuss the item A.
Thank you. I'm hoping it takes less than that. If you guys remember the fun we experienced in the past winter, each of our sites did have to close for weather-related reasons, but Watsonville Prep School was the only one that had to close for a significant amount of time. It was into the flood zone. Areas around the school were flooded, and our families, one, could not get out, and two, it was remaining to be in the flood. It remained in the flood zone for several days because it was more than the easy peasy 5 days. We did need to sign have a J13 waiver submitted through the state, and so this does require your approval, and then the ADA will be excused.
Thank you, Kirsten. And this is fairly routine in these situations. Nothing out of the ordinary.
Nope, nothing out of the ordinary.
Do I hear a motion to approve the submission of Form J-13A, the request for allowance due to emergency conditions?
JP, so moved.
Thank you, JP. Do I hear a second?
I'm a second.
Thank you, Amy. Any discussion? Hearing none. You can call the roll to approve the motion on the form.
Alfred Morikang.
Aye.
Craig Grissom.
Aye.
Ian Connell.
Aye.
JP Anderson.
Aye.
Jaime Kuruga.
Aye.
John Flaherty.
Aye.
Shar Hegde.
Aye.
The motion is approved.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kirsten. Moving to item B, the confirmation and scheduling of board retreat. This is the in-person retreat that had been tentatively scheduled for a date in September. In my discussions with Caprice, I asked that she look to a later date if she thought it was a good idea given her start as our new CEO and the start of the new year and all the other things. She came back with a particular date, and Caprice, you want to talk about it a little bit, please?
I'd like to be able to do either the 23rd or the 30th, if that works for board members. Our goal is to be able to get enough of the strategic plan completed that we can make that board meeting a time for us to be able to, as a leadership team, really sort of set up for you meaty conversation pieces to get your input and to be able to supply you with the data and background of those beforehand. So ideally, we would get a package out to you 7 to 10 days in advance and then be able to make that a really integrative meeting. And given that we've got some work to do with regards to environmental scan and engaging stakeholders and putting data together over the next 30 to 45 days, if we could do this on the 23rd or the 30th, then we would be able to give you a more robust document to inform that meeting.
So in the next couple of days, we'll send out a survey to see if you all can make either one of those days. And if you would rank them number one and number two, we'll do our best to accommodate everybody. And if for some reason or other, we hear that one of you can't make either, we'll look for an alternative date. So
we've suggested Saturdays, but if it turns out that it's actually better for everybody to do a Friday or a work day, we're open to that also. The goal is for us is just to get it to the end of September as opposed to the middle.
Any comments or observations? If you would note, Chuck has joined us. Hey, Judd. Chuck.
Hi, nice. Sorry, I had internet issues. I apologize.
Well, good to have you.
Thank you.
Okay. So look for a date and respond so that Caprice and team can begin the planning process as noted. Moving on to section four, the preliminary SBAC results. James, we got some very preliminary information, correct? You want to talk to us about it?
Yes, I will. Sean, are you going to pull up the presentation? And it's okay if you don't, because I really would be happy to field questions that the board has after reading through the memo. Are you going to put it up, Sean?
I'm going to make you the co-host.
He's making you the co-host, James, so that you can share your screen with your PowerPoint.
First, I'm going to recognize you for any comments you have.
Okay. So again, preliminary scores probably, and good evening, everyone. Sorry for being... jumping straight to business, somewhere probably between 90 and 100%, depending on grade levels of our results, are being shown here. Quincy, our principal in Hayward, was quick to note that one of her fourth graders wasn't on the list with the scores, and he probably scored a 4. So their scores may go up a little bit, but she's very, very proud of her performance. You can see that's one of the highlights here is the growth at Hayward Collegiate in, I'm on math. I meant to be on ELA. Really our strongest growth that we've seen is in the ELA. A little bit of growth here in Hollister, flat at the other two schools. And then one thing of note, which I was worried about, which was the third graders who were those students that had some of kinder and almost all of first out of the school. They actually did not see as big a drop as I thought we were going to see at those grades. So that was kind of one of the most encouraging things that I saw, is that I think we're going to lick the pandemic impact over time. Again, Watsonville, you know, Andy is here, and I know she's, her heart's, you know, broken that there wasn't growth. However, I am happy to say that the oldest students, the fifth graders, did have pretty significant growth over last year's scores. They scored around the 44th percentile. So that's also really promising, because our lower grades, kinder, first and second, we're seeing really strong, you know, stronger foundational skills than we had when we started the school. And in the upper grades, we're seeing our highest, or our oldest students making some good growth there. These are, I'm just speaking speaking to these slides towards the end that show you grade by grade comparisons. In math, just very quickly, all three of our schools implemented a new curriculum last year called Illustrative Math. And I think we're ready this year to do some pretty significant changes, which I think will see us trend back in the direction that we want to see our math scores. And that's bringing back what we used to do pre-pandemic, which was having small group math centers rotations. Last year, we tried to use the program to fidelity, Illustrative Math. This year, we've come up with a plan how we can still use that program, but get students down into a ratio of about 10 to 1 with the adults, which I think is going to be absolutely a game changer. And it just struck me this about 15 minutes ago, looking at these math scores at GPS and HPS, that's exactly where our math scores were when we first took the SBAC, and we were not doing small group rotations in math. And this is where we ended up once we started doing that model. So I'm excited about that happening this year. And I think with that, those are kind of like just the highlights at this point. The next steps that we're going to be doing, Claire and I will get together soon and plan out our next meeting. And then hopefully by that time, we'll have all of the results in and be able to do a dive with the subgroup information and bring that to the next meeting if it's out. I'll just stop sharing and open it up to questions.
Rishi, you want to say anything about these?
One of the things I think it's important for us to note is that we're not making a point so far of comparing ourselves to the local surrounding schools, because we're so much better, it's just stupid. And it would inspire us to not be self-critical if we were to just say, look, we're outperforming everybody by so much. When we really have a lot of work to do to make sure that we're getting every single kid. And at the same time as that, I want to just say our educators are phenomenal and have sprung back from COVID in ways that I haven't seen in a lot of other schools. And I come to this fresh, having been in a lot of other schools in the last 2 years. So it's really phenomenal. And I think it has everything to do with the team's focus on making sure that every single kid is on task and focused, and that every teacher has the resources that he or she needs. So that's super exciting. I think I'd love to be able to give you a much deeper dive, and I think that will come with the academic service, the academic committee meeting, and Claire stewarding that with James, to really dive into the disaggregated numbers and also to look at what are some of the differences between our school sites in terms of both their contexts and their student achievement. I'm excited to be able to dig in as well.
Good. I'll ask our academic chair, do you have any comments, Claire?
No, not at this. I don't have any comments. Okay. I want to look at it and digest it a little bit.
Great. Any other comments or questions?
I have a question. So thanks for sharing, James, all this. Huh? And Caprice, really appreciate your, you know, additional context on all this. And I know this is the start and we don't have all the final information yet. I guess I'm just curious, James, do you feel... the scores are as anticipated based off of our systems over the school year? So this is more of a question on how much is this? We knew this is probably where we're going to land based off our monitoring systems, or was this mainly potentially different than where we thought we were going to live?
You know, it's so hard to say. Ian, because I think there's we have a little bit of an X factor in the way we prep for the SBAC, both the buildup, the excitement, and then we do the kids really show up as if it's the Super Bowl every day. And so I feel like we always outperform on the SBAC compared to like what STAR says, or in the old days, what MAP says. So it was actually, you know, again, same as last year, same as pre-pandemic, the kids perform, they really show up and they perform their best. And so I think we actually outperformed what I would have predicted based on STAR.
That's super helpful. And I just ask, cause I do think that's, for me as a, you know, I'm not as close, just being a board member, it's just helpful to know, cause this is the output of a bunch of work that we were doing, like, you know, course corrections and stuff over the year and adjusting. So it's helpful to just get a sense of where those systems are, especially cause we have a lot of changes on inputs like curriculum and, you know, using STAR versus MAP and otherwise. So that's helpful to know kind of how we're trending towards that.
Yep.
James, I was really, I'm really curious when you start disaggregating by subgroups, what you start learning. I'll just share one learning we're having. Alpha is nearly 60% EL across our network. And so when we start disaggregating, the data and we start clicking on that EL button, the declines we see for our students that are ELs are pretty significant, especially with the third graders. And so Cornerstone is, it's pretty horrific if I click that EL toggle. So just something I wanted to put on your radar, like seeing it in my own schools. And just as you start disaggregating, I think what we're seeing is kids being at home all those months and not having that ability to interact with people really, I think, is causing some challenges around like language acquisition and the ability to translate that into academic achievement. And we're seeing it. It's like our proficiency rates decline significantly when we isolate for that subgroup. So just want to flag that for you as you start digging in. If you see something similar, would love to think through how to collaborate on that.
Yep, for sure. I will say Watsonville is probably the school that has a similar or even maybe higher EL population. And I know like how much they did to help support those kids the last, you know, 2 years since we got back, and we're still seeing not the growth we would expect to see. And I think it is because the gap that we started at 2 years ago is so much bigger than what we normally are dealing with in trying to catch kids up, that we may be pushing towards three, but they're not there yet on that assessment. So, but yeah, I'll definitely follow up with any findings we have on that, or you'll hear it at the next board meeting at a minimum.
Sounds good.
James, I'm interested in your comments about, you know, building the momentum up toward the SBAC.
Uh-huh.
And what occurred to me was, you know, it's primarily for the performance outcome, but it also, it seems to me, and I've just, is this accurate or not, helps kids with respect to taking tests, doesn't it? Or what is that an incidental? Is it not really?
It definitely helps them with the test taking. I also think what we've been able to do for a really high percentage of kids is get them excited about taking tests, which is like, even at the further end of the spectrum, is like, who wants to take the SBAC? Nobody in a normal school, but these kids are like, they're just fired up. They're excited. They're like, come on, can I do some more questions today? And we're like, nope, you gotta, like, we're going to do a few, you know, we're going to pace it out. And, yeah, it's just like, I mean, it really is almost like playoff energy on the campuses. And it's pretty unique. So I think that, you know, again, like Ian, there are so many inputs, it's hard to isolate which ones, like how much weighs the most. But I do think just the mindset of our students going in is a huge plus.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments, observations?
James, you know, besides the small group that we're going to make changes this year, is there anything else in the works to improve our scores? And was Hayward Collegiate, you know, they jumped up about 17 points in ELA and they jumped up about 5 points in math. Are they doing anything different than the other three schools?
Again, there are a lot of inputs at Hayward Collegiate. I would say that it was their second year of using illustrative math, which, you know, after myself learning that program for a year, I feel like we now know what to do way better next year. And I would say that they had gotten through that curve probably. They had Elise there as a principal the year before, and she like probably did a great job of prepping them. And then, you know, Quincy and I have been working hard, and Quincy's been doing a phenomenal job with that team in there as well. And I think the other thing that I saw, Jaime, a couple of weeks before the test started at Hayward Collegiate was like those kids were showing incredibly high effort on all of their work, and they were very proud of what they were doing. So Quincy and her team there really did something I think the other schools didn't get to last year, which was the pride in the quality of the work that each student was doing. And then that paid off, I think, in spades. We had some interventions going on during the school year. We really pushed independent reading a lot at the school, and you know, they had competitions against a couple of the other schools throughout the year. And so I think the amount of reading kids were doing helped. I think Quincy's also, an expert at language arts instruction. And so she really, you know, is in the top 2% of teachers I've ever seen in my life. And I will also say across our other schools, there were all, of course, shining stars. You guys saw kind of the graphs by grade level, how much they varied. And within that, I could almost to a person identify first year teacher was out on maternity. Here's an experienced teacher that's, you know, getting her kids to 80% again already. So there were definitely bright spots all across the network. Also, Hayward's collegiate gain of 17 was just, you know, really, really impressive. And we're all super proud of the kids that, and the staff there.
James, in terms of relative performance, is it real for us to have enough data at this point, at this stage, to set benchmarks so you can at least measure against expectation given the circumstances, which obviously vary?
Yeah, you cut out a little bit there for me at the very end. Can you repeat that last sentence?
I was saying that given the fact that obviously their circumstances are going to drive variance between schools, but just in general, I'm wondering if that's a realistic objective to come up with a viable benchmark that we could measure our progress against.
That's a hard one to know with exactly what you mean, Chuck. So are you talking about just internally with our own schools or relative to other schools out externally?
Internal.
Okay. Yeah, I mean I think we said a year ago we were going to get our test scores back to where we were pre-pandemic, and we're a year in and we did not make the growth we need to get back there. The two priorities we chose, I think, and we all think, are the best two things that we can win on and really will push the needle the most, which is every kid getting extra time in math and reading that need it. And then the second one, of course, is getting the small group math instruction happening again, because I feel like there's just too many kids in that direct instruction model that get lost in the classroom. I'm getting a little bit off of your point, but yes, we can definitely set benchmarks. I think Claire and I will probably, that'll be one of the things that we talk about at our next meeting for sure.
Any other comments or observations? I would finish it with one comment, which is given the news, if James can work with you and you to create our best narrative with respect to the testing and what do we, what, you know, third party validators, comparative charts, although it doesn't, as you were saying, while it does, we don't want to use it as an internal metric, we do want to use it as an external bragging piece, including, you know, Los Gatos or Palo Alto kids too. And just as we, in the end of this year, start thinking, okay, what's our best story here? So if we can, if you guys can work with James, particularly as we get the, as we get the subgroups, that would be helpful. Okay, moving on to another important item, the initial safety review results and follow-up. Amy, you and Kirsten are going to talk about this.
Yes, and I would like to start off by thanking Kirsten for being a collaborative partner in the safety assessments. Is David Labar in the room with y'all?
He's not. He was here, but no. He's not here right now.
Okay. I was hoping he'd be there because he might be able to answer some questions better than I, but I will do my best. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. And do. This one. Okay. Can you see it? Yes?
Yes.
Okay. So we, Kirsten, maybe you could give a little bit of background on how we got to Knowledge Saves Lives to set us up.
Absolutely. Do you want to go to slide 2, I think is the how we got here. And sites and school safety is not a surprise to any of you. It is something that we have all been talking about, and I really have appreciated Caprice's focus on this and the amount of time that we've already had in talking about our site and school safety. So thank you, and a public shout out for having that be one of the first things that we have been tackling. And so again, not a surprise. Each site has experienced various safety concerns. Depending on the site, obviously, there have been different things that have happened. We did create a subcommittee that was David, Nina, and myself that reviewed site safety and to make recommendations. And one of the very first things we did, and then they took off with it, was to contract with an organization called Knowledge Saves Lives. The former Hollister police chief is a part of that organization and knows us well and was able to truly be a huge partner in this. And they then conducted their risk assessment that you each received for our sites. You're muted, Amy. You're saying amazing things.
I said, thank you, Kirsten. That was amazing.
That was amazing things.
Okay. And so let's see, overall of tier 2 risk assessment recommendations, I was happy to see that there was nothing like egregious on any of our sites. There were many recommendations and they were great about listing them from most important to least important. And these on this slide talk about what they found at all of our sites. So this is kind of a shared between all sites. They talked a lot about, I don't think it's on here, but one of a site-specific lockdown training, one of the recommendations they had was to not involve the kids in some of the shooter on site. I don't know what it's called. Sorry.
Active shooter drills.
Active shooter drill, because it's very stressful for them. And so that's something that we need to talk about as a group. We haven't really dug into these reports as a DC team, like really deep. And so this is just kind of an overview. So next we're going to go into what they specifically called out at certain sites that they didn't call out at maybe some of the other sites. The first one is at GPS. They recommend improving the existing visitor management system. They talked about how it's easy. Anyone walking into the office, it's really easy for them just to like go through the little door and get into the back office. There's nothing that's really stopping them from just walking back into our back offices. Update the school's door handles to be locked internally. This is being completed by GUSD and is currently underway. Dave has been working with Paul to go on to a new system. And so that's already being done, which is really great. Hayward Collegiate, fix or replace the main gate and fence. What happened was a tree fell. The door hasn't locked right since. And so David has been working closely with the company to make sure that that gets fixed correctly and speedily. Install campus communication system. So right now everyone has walkies. When they took their walkthrough, they recommended every classroom and office have phones with intercoms. But they also said or walkies, and they didn't know that we had already ordered the extra walkies. So all staff will have a walkie now. An improved video monitoring system. So at Hayward, we do have a Ring doorbell, but it doesn't record continuously. And so that's also something that was already in the works to be done. HPS, this is another update school door handles to be locked internally and relocate a single point of entry to campus. Those, and then WPS, ensure school doors are locked when students are on campus, improve and utilize video monitoring system, relocate a single point of entry to campus, and ensure adherence to visitor monitoring system. And Kirsten.
So as Amy mentioned, and as we shared with all of you, there were specific things within the Knowledge Saves Lives. It is something that I mentioned that we're already talking about with Caprice and the DC team. So we'll be reviewing the recommendations and implementing them as soon as possible, feasible, and we will continue to update the board on progress and then obviously seek approval for large improvements if necessary.
So I'm happy to take questions.
I think my only comment about the radios versus the phones would be that the teachers probably would turn down the radios when they're teaching and they wouldn't get the message. And the students can all hear it. So maybe some earbuds for the teachers if they needed to listen to it without the kids hearing it.
Did you get that?
Yep.
Other questions or comments?
I just have a comment on this, and in my opinion, or what it feels like to me on the safety front, there are some of the moves and things, updates that we are going to incorporate or interpret as a part of the recommendations. And I might have missed this from a prior meeting, but I do feel like it would be important to have some time of like continuous board update or monitoring, because I think all of these different measures are only as good as how well they are maintained. So I don't know what that looks like from a dashboard readout or otherwise on safety walkthroughs. And sorry if you mentioned this in a prior meeting, but I think that's something maybe consider. We have a data-driven approach on everything else. Like, what's the data that we share out with the board so we could stay on top of some of these recommendations, so they're not like set it and then we don't have an ongoing measure of how they're the health of all of the systems that we have in place.
One thing that we can do easily is to have an informative for the board as part of your board agenda every 6 months on safety to give you an update on what items have been completed, so that you have a mid-year check that we've made progress and that progress is documented, or if there are challenges that we have to address, that's documented as well.
Other comments?
Yeah, I have one comment. I did like the recommendation of working with the local police and the fire department, maybe have them take a visit to the schools and get to know the campus a little bit better. because it seems like, you know, they're the first ones that are going to respond or at least be able to know the campus. So I think that's a good idea. That was part of one of the recommendations. So I think we should hopefully try to get that set up sometime this year at each school. Maybe some kind of like little programs that they have, like the police and the fire. They always have these little meetings at the school, and the kids come out and talk to them, and it'll be a good way to interact with them.
Yeah. I think all of the board members have touched on what I think are three items that, as you move away from the initial sort of study that you all have done, I would focus on three points. One is a more holistic approach to the idea of safety and security. It's not just door latches and walkie-talkies. It's the larger program sort of what Jaime was suggesting, of not just shooters, but the fact that Gilroy is literally adjoins a train track. So what happens if there's a derailment of a chemical there, of a hazmat? What are the processes? What are the drills that we've done with respect to that? Hayward is, I don't know how many miles, Nina, from Cal State, East Bay, but right on the other side of that is the Hayward Fault, which is what they call an earthquake time bomb, and which there would be serious issues on any sort of major earthquake on the fault. So what are we doing about that? There are a number of issues. We saw flooding with Watsonville. There are a number of issues that I think we need to take in terms of what Alfred knows from his FEMA experience can be any kind of man-made shootings, et cetera, to natural catastrophes. And the issue becomes what sort of approach generally is our system taking? So can we withstand the, not only can we execute the mission on response and recovery, but and resilience, but what can we answer when the critics come afterwards to do the hot wash of what took place and how did we do? And that has serious implications. Organizations have gone under when they haven't done well on this sort of thing and responded. The second thing is, I think, to go to what Capri said, is we need to have stand-up committees. Amy and Kirsten, and I think it was David, and Nina, to a certain, have done a terrific job on the initial pass-through in terms of dealing with the contractor. But to go to Ian and Caprice's point, we need to have a stand-up on the board, and it should be the governance committee until we if we come up with an operations committee, then it can migrate to that. But we need to have, and there needs to be a standing group, and not only a standing group in terms of the staff, but waterfalling from that is the whole idea of incident, who the incident commanders at the different schools, who's responsible, who are people going to turn to when it hits the fan? And if that person is not there that day, who's the number two? And how does it fall down into that system regardless? And how does it work with respect to parent notification, parent management, spokespeople, on-site response to the first responders, that sort of thing? Who were the key people? Keys in the sense of keys. That sort of one is the first one is the system, Second one is stand up, and it should be an ongoing sort of checklist. And then the third are milestones. What are the milestones that we need to create to make sure that we're meeting the criteria that we've established and set up as fast as possible? We are on a clock here that we do not control. Derailments, shootings, and other terrible incidents do not occur at convenient times. So we need to school up to learn that, you know, we have to worry about 14 or 15 or 16 year olds. What is the criteria for, what is our reporting system for people that we believe are threats? What is the criteria? What is the training for that for teachers? What do we do? What's the process? All those questions have to be answered. Going to Jaime about police. I know that there are several schools around the country that invite the local police department over the summer months to use the school to practice responding to a shooter. So can we get Gilroy or Hayward or other places to use our school as an example? And we don't even need to get into the issue of RSOs and costs and those sorts of things. So this is a a heavy list of things we have to do. And those three things of milestones, systems, develop systems, and then a process or a system of accountability that is really important. And like I said, we're on somebody else's clock on this.
Well, John, I think also to Ian's earlier point, we really do need to inspect what we expect and what we can do. God forbid we make some commitments and time goes by and something slips and we don't follow up and we have a problem. And we have some significant liability as a result of it. So I couldn't agree more. It's an ongoing commitment of inspecting everything we're expecting.
Yeah, I will just tell you one small story about this that shows a significant difference. Kirsten knows this. When I was at the Department of Transportation 4 months before 9/11, we did a tabletop exercise in which we had two airplanes going to the Olympics that had been commandeered by terrorists. And we ran through, you know, events, and I, you know, all of us had different roles to play. And then we subsequently did an analysis afterwards. Well, when 9/11 happened, we immediately knew what to do to the extent that you can in the fog of war. And consequently, Normanetta was the only, because one of the things we found out was nobody's going to be able to get anywhere if something happens. Phones are not going to work, and traffic's going to lock up in a second because people are going to flee the city. Consequently, when 9/11 happened, Normanetta was the only person, the only cabinet member that got to the White House, what we called the point of decision. He was the only person there and consequently was able then to consult and communicate with decision makers in the base, the PIOC, what they called it, and subsequently bring the airplanes down and a couple of other items. So you're right, Chuck, practice, preparation equals performance, and no more, it is no more true than in this kind of thing. So if we do practice what happens when the, when, you know, a train derails somewhere, we'll be ready for it. We have a commitment to, for board members, we made a strong commitment to our former board member, Nora, who raised this issue and it was close to her heart. And I just want to continue to raise this because we really made a strong commitment that each of us would support this and put our time, effort, and the organization's funding behind it. So, and she raised this with me when we were talking, when she was on the CEO team. So I just want to raise that point. In addition to all of us, our own personal commitments to the safety of our kids and staff. So, other questions before I close this out? Comments? Okay, again, Kirsten, Amy, thank you. Pass on our thanks to David. We will we'll move on to the closed session. We will vote for a closed session. The reason is to for the closed session is consideration of amending the CEO and superintendent. I forgot about that. The contract for that and the consideration of some business having to do with our general counsel. Do I hear a motion to enter into closed session?
JP, so moved.
Thank you, JP.
Claire will second.
Thank you, Claire. Sean, would you call the roll, please?
Alfred Morricane.
Aye.
Claire Grissom.
Aye.
Ian Connell.
Aye.
JP Anderson.
Aye.
Emma Caroga.
Aye.
John Flaherty.
Aye.
Shar Hegde.
Aye.
The motion is approved.
Don't you forgot me.
Oops. Chuck Daggs.
Aye.
Sorry about that.
Thank you. We'll move to closed session. If staff is not returning after the closed session, thank you for attending. Thanks for your reports and work on them. James, thanks for the SBAC information, if you're still on.
I'm going to create a breakout room for the closed session.
Yeah, please.
Well, you know, I don't mind because now I'm going to start doing it and won't feel bad about it. So,
yeah, you're looking at a 14-hour day.
Yeah.
Yep. 2 minutes. I'll review them from this point out.
All right, welcome back, everyone. We are out of closed session. The actions taken were the board approved a ministerial amendment to the CEO superintendent's contract, which permitted her to have full authority on starting July 10th. We discussed other personnel matters and also talked about the need to follow through with respect to additional salary issues over the coming weeks. Moving on to item six, closing items, adjourning the meeting. I'll hear a motion for adjournment. Do I hear?
So moved.
And do I hear a second? Okay. Sean, would you call the roll?
Alfred Morricane.
Aye.
Chuck Daggs.
AKA Hot Pants.
That needs to be in the minutes.
Can I guess some?
Aye.
McConnell.
Aye.
JP Anderson.
Aye.
Emma Caroga.
All right, before we dismiss, I just want to apologize today. I was outside looking for my dog. We just rescued a dog, and he's been missing since 2 o'clock.
Oh, no.
Did you find him?
Yeah. Right during the meeting, that's why I was in and out because I was like sitting outside and a lady called during the time and we did find him.
Oh, yay.
But, so I do apologize for being a little flaky today.
Thank you for making the effort, honey.
Yes, our kids are Dune and Abel are very happy.
Oh yeah, ecstatic.
Mm-hmm. Thank John you.
Hi.
Shara Hegde.
Hi.
The motion to adjourn is approved.
Right. Welcome back, Alvin.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
And thank you all for taking time out of your summer to participate in the meeting. Thank you. See you soon.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Here.
Bye, everyone.
You guys are so efficient.